Chelaika followed her immediately, and she could hear Sir Stephen cursing at the sudden movement before he looked up and realized where they were heading.
The siege engines! Captains, get...
The loss of his army struck home. A motley of infantry and sergeants ran along with him. His knights were gone. There were no captains to order. As her wars drew closer, the tiny remains of the shattered army behind her, she could see giant bolts being loaded, engineers working winches on the machines, lowering them to aim directly at her.
The devil, you fools! Not us! The devil!
But her words went unheard. Arrows whisked past her, a few flinking off the machine's shoulders. Chelaika dodged an arrow. Herwaz risked a glance back and was rewarded by the sight of the wall of garrison pikemen dissolving. They ran now, abandoning their useless weapons, taking cover in the market stalls or racing down the broad streets. The devils surged through, rushing into the vacant square. 2:12:30. Herwaz turned back to the palace steps, just as the first of the giant bolts struck mere handspans from the machine's leg. She could see the engineers loading the next bolt, winching it back. She stared at the cracked stone. The bolt's head was sharp iron, as wide as the machine's metal helmet, the shaft thick as her arm. The war machine would not stop it, of that she was certain. She turned back as the engineers locked the next bolt in place and trained the siege engine on her. And then Tone ran past her.
Let us pass! They are with me! Let us pass!
Tone. His gaze was fixed on the massive arching stone doors and the scattering of guards who stood before them. A handful of men in gaudy armor, black chased with gold. The ridiculous false wings worn by the knights at Lees spreading from their backs, only greater. They leveled gilded halberds at Herwaz, paused at the sight of Tone.
I am a holy brother of the Emperor's own. Stand aside and let us enter.
She, that is the hand. With the hounds of hell behind her.
He swept the weapon down to indicate the knot of traveling people, villagers, and red lords trailing behind her. Tone hammered his flail haft against the halberd's head.
The hounds of hell are behind all of us. We must appeal to the throne directly. Only the Emperor can save us now.
Helwar, there isn't much time.
She turned. The square was full of devils now. The garrison had given up all hope of fighting them and fled. The creatures slowed as they closed in on them, their stalking behavior that Herwaz had already seen. The last of the army had gathered around her, scores winnowed out from thousands. Most were wounded, lacking all semblance of order. She could feel them edging backward up the steps. They were broken and terrified. They wouldn't stand a chance. Herwaz moved up beside Bolton and Barnard. Chelaika joined her. Sir Stephen had found his wind and stood with them, Samson at his side.
If you are going to speak to the Emperor, Tone, then you should hurry. I will do my best to give you time.
Oh, that is poor comfort.
A few of Sir Stephen's men came forward to join the line at the base of the steps, but most backed further up behind them toward the huge doors.
It is all the comfort we will get. Our faith is in the Emperor and his in us, and he will be a mighty fortress and the bane of our enemies.
Barnard continued the passage from the writ.
Yea, though mine enemy is vast beyond counting, 10,000 before me and 20,000 behind.
Yea, though my foe bears a glittering sword and his countenance is terrible to behold, he shall not come nigh to me or to my family.
For a mighty fortress is my Emperor, and none shall pierce his walls. Go, Tone. Go and do what you can.
A bolt shot down from the battlements, slamming into one of the devil's shoulders and sending the creature spinning before it fell to the ground. A moment later, two huge stones arced past them. The first flew wide, bouncing harmlessly across the square before crushing an abandoned cart. The second struck a devil full in the face, sending the creature staggering back into the monsters behind it. The devils paused, wary of the engines on the palace parapets and Helwaz and her machine.
No! The Emperor has sent you to me for this. Of that I am sure. I do not know his plan, but I will see it through. We go in, all of us, together.
You do not wear the red. No mere pilgrim takes audience before the sacred throne.
He does when the veil is rent.
He does not!
Tone hammered the flail haft into his head, knocking his helmet askew, and sent him a tumble down the steps. The guard beside him had no time to react before Tone reversed the weapon and flayed him in the stomach with such force that Helwaz could see his breastplate dent. The man pitched forward onto his knees, and his dislodged helmet came to rest by his fallen comrade. The rest of the guards backed away as Tone raised the flail over his head.
The veil is rent. I will appeal to the throne if I must kill each of you to do it. The Emperor sent this girl and her people to me. They saved me, they brought me here, and they are coming in with me. Now are you going to open the gates, or are you going to die?
They did neither. The deserter's false wings shook as they vaulted the stone balustrade and disappeared around one of the buttresses.
Helwaz!
She turned, leapt up the steps, wedged the corner of her shield into the gap between the stone doors. They were the biggest doors she had ever seen. Huge slabs of stone, bigger even than the imperial shrine in her village. She was shocked at how easily, how smoothly they opened. The darkness beyond so complete it swallowed the light. More bolts were raining down among the devils, more stones. Their stalking advance had broken apart. Two knelt, clawed hands covering wounds. One braved the hail of missiles and rushed toward them, and Helwaz leapt from the stairs, hammering down with her knife hand. The devil turned the blade aside with a sweep of its hand, but the weight of the machine staggered it back, and it wrapped its arms around her to keep itself upright. She brought the knife down and up, again and again and again, until at last she felt the devil's hold on her slacken, and she shoved it away, turning back to the palace. Her people were streaming up the steps, disappearing into the hungry darkness that held like a curtain across the open doors, forbidding the daylight to enter. Shalika and Samson were the last of them to race through, and Tone stood beside the open doors, waving Helwaz in.
Come on!
Helwaz leapt up the steps, slowing just enough to let Tone run in, and then she was inside, the cool darkness swallowing her. She could see nothing, but heard Tone straining at one of the doors. She ran to help him, felt with her shield until she found the door's edge. The devils were nearly upon them. She braced the machine against the doors, expecting to feel the weight of the devils at any moment, to hear their shrieking and feel the weight of their numbers as they tried to push their way inside. But whatever force forbade the light to enter seemed to forbid sound as well.
Where are we?
You are in the center of the world. You are in the heart of all you have ever known, and soon you will meet your savior.
The doors shuddered. Helwaz stepped away from the door, trying to take in her surroundings, but her eyes stubbornly refused to adjust to the darkness. She squinted hard, but the black was so complete that she had to blink to make certain her eyes were open.
Shalika!
I'm here, Helwaz.
Can you make a light? I can't...
I have it. Your tinder will not catch in here.
By the soft light of the fire, she could see Tone at the base of another set of stairs, so broad their edges were swallowed by the darkness. The tiny light illuminated only the space just around him, leaving Helwaz and the rest of them in the pitch black.
That's not enough to...
Wait.
Tone held up a hand. The flame danced, sparked, spread. It seemed to follow tendrils in the air, twining and untwining and then breaking apart until it danced about them, like a storm of fireflies clustering overhead. The flickering light fell on all of them, lighting the huge space brighter than a dozen torches. As the tiny motes danced above their heads, they drifted, bouncing against new motes, kindling them.
Only the sacred oil can light the nave.
It's beautiful.
It is but a taste. The Emperor is the light of the world.
The room was smaller than Helwaz had thought, dominated by a wide spread of stairs rising up to another set of doors, smaller cousins of the ones they'd just entered. These smaller doors were made entirely of gold, their faces chased with the image of two palatines in the traditional pose. Above the palatines' heads were etched two halves of a throne, joining at the seam between the doors. Two ancient sojourners sat before the golden doors, so thin that Helwaz at first thought them skeletons. One of them shifted, his ragged red cloak shaking off dust. The edges of the old fabric were trimmed in a silver pattern that mimicked chains. The man stood, leaning on his flail, more crutch than weapon, and extended a hand to them, palm out.
I am the Emperor's left gate. Who comes to stand in the shadow of the throne?
I am Brother Tone, the Emperor's own.
Tone mounted the bottom step and inclined his head.
Brother, not father? Come closer. My eyes are not what they once were.
Will these doors hold?
They'll have to. Nothing in here to brace them with.
They will not need bracing. The Emperor himself will help us soon.
Tone climbed the steps until the Sojourner stopped beckoning with a withered hand. He was so close that the old man could have reached out and touched him.
Your cloak is grey. Where is your chapter father? Did he send you under his seal?
Father Horus stands at the Emperor's right hand now. The chapter is scattered, so I shall appeal to the throne for an elevation.
That is why you are here? To make your case that you should be raised up? Have you forgotten the command of the writ? Pride
is the Emperor's alone. I know the words, Holy Father. I do not seek the elevation for myself. That is for the Pentarchy to decide, if they still live. I saw many red cloaks among the dead at the gate, and at least one trimmed with gold.
What dead?
The veil is rent, Holy Father. The devils are here. That is why I have come to appeal to the sacred throne for aid.
The Emperor speaks through me. If the devils were here, I would know.
They are here. They are beating on the doors of this place right now. Enough of this. We have to...
Shh. Tone cut her off.
Who is that?
The left gate squinted down at Helwaz.
She is a villager, the Emperor's instrument. When the devils would have taken me, she delivered me. She took me through them and into the city. She must come with me before the throne.
A villager? I deny her and you, Pilgrim. You may not pass. We have admitted only Pentarchs for as many winters as I can recall.
How many winters can you recall, Holy Father? The veil is rent. I do not have time for formality now. Stand aside. I am going before the throne.
The left gate's pale face turned even paler.
You dare! You will be cast out of the order. You will be made heretic. Your life and soul shall
be... All our lives and souls are forfeit should the devils win through, Holy Father. Stand aside.
The other Sojourner rose slowly to his feet, leaned heavily on his flail.
I have heard enough. Spears, to me, take this heretic in irons. Spears! Spears!
I am sorry, Holy Father. They are all gone.
What do you mean?
The right gate sagged against his flail.
Tone, there is no time.
I am sorry.
He strode to the golden doors. The gates made fruitlessly to stop him. Tone gently disentangled the left gate, pressing him back down into his chair. The right gate beat his withered fists uselessly on Tone's back, his flail head jingling over his shoulder. Finally, he too sank back into his chair.
Your soul is damned.
Aye, Holy Father.
Tone pulled the first door open.
And I will pray to the Emperor for deliverance.
They held the gates of their enemies.
Barnard sank to his knees, and she could hear her father's muttered prayers. The door, unlocked, swung smoothly open. There was no clap of thunder, no bolt of light. Perhaps this was just an antechamber, and the sacred throne was further beyond. Helwaz squinted. There was no thick darkness beyond the golden doors. The massive chamber inside was lit from above with a grey half-light. The floor was thick with dust, broken only by a few footsteps trailing off out of view. Helwaz took a step. She was terrified by the prospect of seeing the Emperor, but the burning curiosity, the sudden spike of hope, was too strong to deny. Barnard got to his feet, and Samson took a step with her.
Back! None of you may come before the sacred throne!
I am about to see the throne.
Tone turned back, beckoned to her.
Just the girl.
Jelaika, Samson, and Barnard shook their heads in unison.
She is not going anywhere alone with you.
We will leave the door open.
The two gates looked up in awe as she approached close enough for their weak eyes to see.
Sacred throne, protect us.
Your Eminence, Helwaz, please, take me with you. Let me see.
Come on, Helwaz.
Helwaz turned back to the doorway, but not before she saw Samson's steadying hand on Barnard's shoulder, holding him back.
At least tell me if my children are there. Tell me if they stand in the shadow of the throne. Tell them how much I love them.
And Liuba, I'd like to see her if I could, one more time.
Guard the main doors. Put your bodies against them.
At the thought of finally approaching the throne, her knees shook so badly that she wondered if she would be able to move the machine forward.
Just one more impossible thing.
With that, she ducked the machine low, walking carefully through the golden doors. The room beyond stank of dust and mildew, of rotting mortar and wet stone. All was cast in a thin, grey half-light, filtering down from a circle of dirty windows in a huge cupola that capped the room hundreds of feet above her, perched atop decrepit stone ribs, hung with tendrils of long-dead moss. She let her eyes drift down to take in the room, so vast and empty that she felt a brief sense of vertigo. She glanced around for anything to break the emptiness and finally found it, a pedestal in the center, reached by three steps, plain stone worn smooth and concave over time. Atop them sat a throne of simple gray stone, speckled with tiny flakes of moldering gold paint, still clinging to the surface despite the ravages of eons, caked with dust and mold. It was empty. Helwaz wasn't sure what she should have expected. She had always pictured the Emperor as he was described in the stories, a stern-faced man in golden armor, shield and hammer in his hands. Could he be something else? Something she couldn't see? Helwaz had no idea, but she was sure of one thing. If this was the sacred throne, then the writ had lied. It did not glow with the holy radiance of the divine presence. The souls of her beloved dead did not stand in its shadow. Her mind desperately fumbled for any explanation. But she could feel it. There was nothing. Only a simple chair as ancient and moldering as the men just outside the doors who'd been set to guard it.
They tricked us.
They had groveled to the order for nothing. She thought of Barnard and her father outside. What could she tell them? That everything they believed, everything they lived by, was a lie? The pilgrims stood silently staring at the throne. As Helwaz watched, Tone's flail fell from his limp fingers. He sank slowly to his knees.
Perhaps he's moved to another chamber.
But she knew it wasn't true. Wherever he may have ever been, he was gone from this stretch of empty dust. He would not be coming to their aid today. Helwaz swallowed the rage, the doubt, the boiling questions. If any of them were to live long enough to grapple with the truth of the Emperor, the devils first had to be defeated. That much was simple.
Tone, what about the congregation of the faithful? Where is it? How do we find them?
She strode to him, nudged him with the machine's knee.
Oh.
He shrugged the touch off.
There is no time. Where is the congregation?
Nothing. Somewhere deep within her, a part of her demanded that she stop and grapple with the truth she had witnessed.
Later.
The devils were real, and they were outside the palace doors. She would deal with them first. When she left Tone and returned to the antechamber, she motioned to Shalika, jerked her chin back toward the pilgrim.
Bring him.
She didn't question the order, just ducked her head and darted through the doors, emerging with Tone a moment later. He went as meekly as a child, Shalika leading him by the hand, his flail left behind. Samson, Barnard, and Wolfen all raced from where they had stood with their backs bracing the palace doors.
What did you see?
They lied to us. All our lives. We didn't have to hurt anyone in Hammersdown. All we needed to do was stand up to them. Nothing. The Emperor is not here.
Barnard made to rush forward, but Helwaz stepped in to block his path. She thought of what Laelabel had said when they had left the Sindhi camp to seek out the war machine.
Men have ever been weak. The same loss that makes a woman into a mother and leader of a band will drive a man mad. It takes so little to break them.
Tears sparkled on Barnard's cheeks as he tried to get around her.
Please, Your Eminence. I have
No, Barnard. It will only hurt you more.
Please!
He dodged left, then right. But Helwaz had grown skilled at handling the machine's controls, and she matched his movements until Barnard was forced to stagger back. He sank to his knees.
At least At least tell me if you saw Gunnar and Messina. Tell me if you saw my children.
The lie came easily to her lips, though it made her sick to speak it.
For you, Barnard, because I know you need it, and because you have hurt enough for one lifetime. They are surely in the shadow of the throne, Barnard. They are surely with the Emperor. But whatever that is, it isn't beyond that door. Do you trust me, Barnard? Do you believe I work in the Emperor's name?
He nodded.
Then trust me now. There is nothing in there for you. There is nothing in there for any of us.
She turned to the gates.
Where is the congregation of the faithful?
The left gate raised his head to her, rheumy eyes squinting.
Who are you, villager girl?
I am not a devil, and because of that, I forgive you for all the harm you have done to me and mine. I will save you if I can. Where is the congregation?
And if I do not tell you, will you kill me?
No, the devils will do that soon enough. And if they don't, then time will. Tell me, because we both know what is in that room. Because all of us have lost loved ones in coming here. And because you can still do some good with the little life that is left to you.
He finally stood and made his way, leaning on his flail, down the wide staircase.
What are you doing, man? You cannot. This is not right.
I have never done good or ill, right or wrong. Only what the Emperor asked of me.
Then Helwaz saw why the right gate was so furious. The left gate's narrow body had concealed an alcove. In walking away, he had revealed a silver statue of a palatine that stood on a pedestal inside, its silver wings folded back into the wall behind it. Helwaz used the machine at the waist to get a closer look, succeeded only in scraping the machine's helmet against the wall.
Shalika!
The hapty girl rushed to the alcove and ran her hands over the statue.
It's...
The right gate stood to approach her, and she paused long enough to pull one of her knives from her waist and point it at him.
No closer, old man. I have not had my fill of killing yet.
The right gate took a step back, sat back down in his chair. Shalika turned back to the statue and studied it another moment.
I have it!
She pulled the statue forward, and then the wall beside the golden doors began to shudder. Helwaz staggered back as it rose, sending up thick puffs of dust.
Sacred throne.
Samson's eyes rose to watch the wall as it lifted up to disappear among the motes of light that still burned and died overhead, sending them scattering. Even Barnard forgot his weeping at the sight of the most incredible tinker work Helwaz had ever seen. The raised wall revealed vast iron wheels, each big enough to fit on a Cindy wagon, driving thick metal rods. At last, the mechanism ground to a halt, and the wall shuddered and stopped its ascent. Behind it was another staircase, much narrower than the one leading to the golden doors, but still wide enough to admit three men abreast. It wound sharply upward into darkness. Beneath the staircase was another corridor, and Helwaz could see it running to a huge door that must have been on the far side of the throne room. She could see tiny shreds of daylight filtering in beyond it, and knew it must lead out of the palace, a secret postern door. Helwaz turned to the right gate, motioned with her shield to the staircase.
The congregation is up there?
The man only stared at his lap, as senseless as Tone. Helwaz shook her head and moved to mount the stairs, then realized the machine would not fit. She turned it sideways and took a crab step into the darkness beyond. Shalika raced past her.
Let me go first.
Helwaz turned to the tiny fragment of the army that remained.
Come on.
Where does it lead?
Away from the devils and...
She regarded the ancient vastness of the room about them, the decay and neglect. It was death.
And this...
Progress up the steps was maddeningly slow. She had walked the machine sideways before, but never at such a steep angle. Her people crowded behind her until she warned them against it. She could lose her balance and topple onto her side. Sir Stephen steered Tone up the steps with them, guiding him by his elbow. The pilgrim's eyes were dry now, but he stared at his feet, not speaking. The staircase wound steeply around, and Helwaz realized that they were inside the great dome that capped the room with the empty stone chair, were working their way toward the cupola with its few dirty glass windows. After what felt like an eternity, at last the corridor grew lighter ahead of them, opening out into a vast gallery. Shalika raised a hand, and ducked around the latest turn in the corridor. A moment later, she stepped back into view, still looking around the corner, face slack with shock. The corridor gave out into a vast archway, and Helwaz was able to move the machine up beside her bodyguard. The cupola had looked small from the throne room below, but up here it was enormous. A vast ring capped by a massive dome. The dirty glass windows admitted the thin light, washing all in pale grey. On one side of the room was a vast tinker-made instrument, rows of huge metal pipes rising to where the curve of the dome began. They were covered in rust and mouldering flecks of paint, so dust-choked that Helwaz could tell they hadn't been used in hundreds of winters. Seated before them was another withered sojourner, as ancient and decrepit as the gates, but broader in the shoulders and chest. His cloak was lined with a silver pattern that imitated the pipes in the mechanism behind him. He held a lash in his hand, the only thing in the whole room that looked carefully maintained. Before him were 20 men and women, standing in two orderly rows. They looked so familiar.
They could have been the twins of the three wizards the Order had with them outside Lees.
They were shackled, hand and foot, starved, filthy, their stick-thin limbs draped in rags. Their eyes had the same vacant, defeated stare. Even in the wide space of the gallery, Helwaz wrinkled her nose at their stink. This sojourner's sight was better than that of the gates. He stood, eyes widening as Helwaz rounded the corner and her people trailed in behind her. He raised a finger to his lips, moved quickly across the gallery, giving the chanting prisoners a wide berth. He shook out the lash as he came, and Helwaz moved the machine forward to meet him.
Softly. If you wake them from reverie, it will be on your head. Who are you? How did you get in here?
Is this the congregation?
By the throne, you will turn around or I will...
The sojourner froze as his eyes fell on Tone.
You, Greycloak, aspirant, you have no business here. Out, out in the name of the Emperor.
Tone only stood, eyes cast down. The sojourner pushed past Helwaz, his face so incandescent that Helwaz's party drew back from him.
Do you not hear me? I am the keeper of the congregation. I am raised above the red. I command you to answer me.
When Tone raised his head, Helwaz could see in his eyes that the shock of seeing that empty, mouldering chair had not yet worn off. The old sojourner exploded with shocking speed and fury. He threw himself at Tone, the lash rising and falling. Tone threw his arms up to protect himself, staggering backward. Tone was driven back. The sojourner followed him, continuing to rain blows down. Tone offered no resistance, and the sojourner did not tire. Helwaz turned to Shalika.
That's enough. Can you...
Tone suddenly swatted the lash aside and seized the old man by his neck. His eyes were focused now, cheeks red. He spun, slamming the old man against the railing, bending him back over it.
Enough! I will wait no longer. I will not leave. I have served the Emperor faithfully.
Tone released his grip enough to allow the man to breathe, but not enough to let him break free.
Please, don't kill me.
You damned coward. If you die, then it is the Emperor's will. Where is the nightingale? I will not ask you another time.
The nightingale? It is the song.
The song is dead. Where is the nightingale?
The sojourner's jaw went slack as he processed this news, then clenched.
You lie. I will do nothing for a rogue member of our order. I will not damn my soul for the likes of you. The devils are here. They are within the city, around this very building. There is no time.
I don't see why we need a nightingale to wake them. I can just go over there and clap in their faces.
Do not dare!
The sojourner struggled against Tone's grip.
Wake them incorrectly and they will rend the veil asunder. It is already rent.
Tone shook the sojourner like a dog worrying a fresh-caught hare.
No, we must wake them properly.
You lie!
The sojourner shook free of Tone's grip, stood, holding his hand to his throat.
The devils are not here. Now get you gone and take your companions with you. Leave your cloak. I strip it from you. I cast you out. You are no pilgrim of the Emperor.
I am a greater servant to the throne than you will ever be.
He seized the old man's wrist, began tugging him toward the stairs.
Come,
Look upon the devils, and we will see if that wakes you.
The Sojourner struggled, but it was useless.
No.
Tone spun on him, stabbing an angry finger at the staircase.
All the devils in hell are right on the other side of these walls, you old fool, and this congregation is the one thing that can send them back again.
The Sojourner's face twisted in horror.
I cannot leave the shrine. Please, don't.
Tone dragged the Sojourner almost close enough to kiss.
Then tell me the truth. Does the Nightingale still live?
Tone shook him again.
Does she live?
The Sojourner nodded. Tone's shoulders went slack with relief.
Where is she?
The Nightingale is in its cage.
Then tell me where I may find this cage.
Tone squeezed the old man's wrist. The Sojourner fell to his knees, but said nothing.
Old fool, tell me, or I will drag you out into the light and throw you to the devils.
East. It lies to the east, past the silver mines. Follow the towpath for a day or two.
Tone released his wrist, stood glaring at him.
Perhaps you lie. I should take you with me as a surety.
No! I swear I speak true. Let me stay here. I must tend to the congregation. They cannot feed themselves. They need me, or they will die.
Tone leaned down, pulled the old man to his feet.
I will be back, and if I find you have lied, you will pay.
The Sojourner nodded and backed away, leaving his lash where it lay.
We must go.
Tone turned to Helwaz.
We must retrieve the Nightingale and bring her here.
And you are sure this wizardry will work?
It is not wizardry. They are blessed by the Emperor himself. His power flows through them.
Tone, you saw that empty chair the same as I.
Tone said nothing, and Helwaz bit back her rage.
This will work. This will send the devils back.
Tone nodded.
How can you be sure?
Tone looked down.
I cannot, but the city is already fallen, Helwaz. Your army is scattered. We cannot beat these monsters by force of arms, not now. If the devils are to be driven back, it is the Emperor's hand that shall drive them. This congregation is our one hope.
Helwaz looked back at the prisoners.
Slim hope.
I am going to find the Nightingale, alone, if I must.
And when you have found the Nightingale...
Helwaz whirled on him.
When this works and the devils are driven back, you will face the world and tell them that it was wizardry that wrought their salvation. That the Order trucked with wizards all along. You will never raise a hand to anyone again, so long as you draw breath.
Tone was silent for a long time. When at last he looked up and met Helwaz's gaze, his eyes were wet.
I will. Help me to do this, and I will. I swear it in the shadow of the throne.
Helwaz stepped close to him.
We have stood in the shadow of the throne. It is cold and it is dark and it is empty. You swear it in my shadow now, in the shadow of my war machine. And I accept your oath and swear my own, that if you ever break yours, I will make you pay.
The gates had resumed their seats by the time Helwaz and her party returned to the bottom of the hidden staircase. They were silent, shoulders slumped, and didn't even bother to raise their eyes at Helwaz and her cohort. The great doors to the outside were still sealed, motionless.
Perhaps the devils have given up and gone home.
That is unlikely.
She turned back to the people gathered around her.
Stay here. I'd rather sneak out than fight, and that means a small group who can move fast. I will go in case we have to fight devils, and Tone in case this Nightingale's cage is guarded by the Order. Might be his cloak will get us in without a fight.
And I will go, because I am not leaving your side.
You don't want to seek your mother?
Mother would never forgive me if I left you to look for her. We will find her when this is done.
Helwaz moved the machine close to her father, bent it at the waist. Samson only reached in and placed his hand on her foot.
Do not die, Helwaz. My heart could not bear it.
Lead the villagers until I get back. Barnard will be your strong right hand.
Sir Stephen surveyed the few troops he had left to him.
He will have a score of strong right hands. Hurry back.
Helwaz turned to the long passage that led to the postern door and motioned for Shalika and Tone to go before her down the dark passage. Tone rushed past her, and Helwaz saw his hands were empty.
Your mail!
It will not serve against this foe anyway.
He approached the postern door and reached into a niche beside it, yanking on something inside. The door shuddered, and the locking bar slid aside, drawing out of the iron brackets and into the wall. Tone pushed the door wide. The light washed across her face and she blinked it away, stepping out behind the palace, shield raised, anticipating a blow, the scraping of iron sharp claws across the shield's surface. There was nothing. She slowly lowered the shield, blinking at a wide boulevard that shot arrow straight toward the other side of the capital and its outer wall. The sight was breathtaking. It was as if all the chaos and violence Helwaz had just witnessed had taken place in some other world. Here, the city was pristine and deserted, the cobbles recently swept. The houses and storefronts were shuttered but otherwise untouched. The stone and wood was in good repair, the leaded glass unbroken.
Come, Helwaz. Perhaps the devils have not found the postern gate. It will not be manned now. We can get out right under their noses.
Tone was right. After jogging down the central boulevard unmolested, amidst thick silence, they did indeed find the postern gate abandoned. After dislodging the gate's massive locking bar, they were able to set off down the cobbled road, leading through a squalid village. Tone set off toward a pillar of black stone where signs had been affixed.
Come on.
Tone followed one of the signs onto a dirt track that led off the main road.
It's this way.
Shouldn't we close the gate?
No, we cannot set the locking bar from outside, Helwaz. And there is nothing out here that can trouble our people more than what is in there.
It is better to leave them open. Balk might be glad of a quicker escape, should things go poorly before we return.
Helwaz hurried after Tone.
Then we must return quickly.
They ran. The dirt track meandered some, but mostly ran straight to the east, finally falling in beside a river, where it became dotted with hoofprints and piles of dried mule dung. They pushed on in silence, until Helwaz realized that the sound of her companion's footfalls had grown quieter, and she slowed the machine, looking behind her. Schleicher and Tone wouldn't be able to keep pace with the machine unless she slowed it to a jog.
If we don't make it back in time, the congregation could be lost. And father.
She ran the machine to them and scooped Schleicher up, setting her on the machine's shoulder. Tone she held to the breastplate, nestled behind the table-sized shield, as she had carried him into the gates of the capital.
Helwaz, put me down! This won't work!
It has to! We're moving too slowly! We don't know how long it will take the devil to break into the palace!
She set off at a run, and knew right away that it was useless. The machine shuddered and bounced as she lengthened her stride, and within moments, Schleicher and Tone were holding on for their lives. Schleicher leapt down.
I'm sorry, Helwaz. I can't hold on at this pace.
Helwaz set Tone down.
We have to move faster!
Not if it kills us. Give me a moment.
Helwaz gritted her teeth while Tone stripped off his armor, leaving it in a pile as he refastened his cloak around his shoulders. Lastly, he raised his hood.
You look smaller.
I'll move faster this way.
Then he hunted around on the ground until he'd found a solid-looking branch, nearly as long as he was tall.
Lend me one of your knives.
That is an intimate request to make of a hefty caster.
I'll give it back.
Schleicher exchanged a glance with Helwaz and shrugged, handing it to him.
I don't have time to teach you to cast, priest.
What are you doing? There's no time!
Tone ignored her, kneeling, and placed the branch across his thigh.
Our faith is in the Emperor, and his is in us, and he will be a mighty fortress and the bane of our enemies. Yea, though mine enemy is vast beyond counting, 10,000 before me and 20,000 behind.
Using Shalika's knife, he stripped it of its branches and knots, working quickly. Helwaz didn't need to listen to know they were verses of the writ.
How can you? After what you... what we saw?
I saw nothing.
That's right. It was an old, empty chair.
The Emperor is more than a chair, Helwaz.
Stop lying. I know you felt it too. You were struck dumb until that sojourner beat you.
I was shocked, yes, and my faith was tested, but I have found it again.
How can you say that? Maybe the Emperor lived once, but he is gone now.
Tome never took his eyes from his work.
I do not presume to know the Emperor's will in all things, Helwaz, and neither should you. His will is
like unto the wind, unseen yet touching all. It rippleth the wheat in the field and draweth the wave across the still water. I know the verse, Tone. I am a factor's daughter.
Tone stood, tossed the knife back to Schleicher, spun the branch in his hand. Bark still clung to it in patches, but it made a passable staff.
A factor's daughter may recite the writ word for word, but that does not mean she divines its meaning. You are brave, Helwaz, but you lack the humility you will need if you are ever to truly work his will.
Why should I believe you? You whose army I destroyed. You who I found cowering in a ring of carts on the road. You who wept at the sight of that empty chair you claim means nothing. You who would still be stuck behind the postern gate without my help.
Shalika made a great show of testing the edge of the knife Tone had borrowed.
This will need sharpening.
Both Tone and Helwaz stared at her.
Now I can run. Let's go.
He set off running again. They found the cage the next morning. It was a small fortress, even smaller than Lee's. There was a tower, standing not much higher than the palisade itself, a rickety thing, leaning precariously to one side. There had been a fight here. An imperial banner lay trampled in the grass, and Helwaz could make out a mound of fresh earth. She had seen similar too many times since she had left Lutet, the kind of hasty pile that came of burying many dead quickly. Here and there, the grass was marked with the tacky brown of blood dried not too long ago.
The devils made it here.
Not devils.
Helwaz pointed with her knife hand to where the back end of a wagon was visible, drawn up behind the fort. The edge of the Sindhi trefoil could be seen on its canvas housing.
Traveling people? Here?
It must be Onus and those who went with him.
As she spoke, a man appeared behind the palisade, walking along some hidden parapet. It was Poke Drover, his thick paunch held in by a stolen imperial cuirass, his big head squeezed into a plumed helmet with a visor tied up with a leather thong. He had a halberd over his shoulder, and he kept switching it from side to side, unsure how to carry it.
Of all the refuges for them to find, it had to be here.
Enemy at the north palisade!
Poke turned and called up to the tower. There, Helwaz saw Georgi, leaning out over its rickety railing. Beside him was an old woman in a black gown sewn to fit her, the high collar rising all the way to her ears. Her face looked younger than her withered body, and Helwaz realized that it was because she was smiling, delighted by something Georgi was showing her. The Sindhi man gestured, and Helwaz followed the path of his movement to where two of his flame men danced beside the fort, pirouetting around a small fire that must have been built to provide the fuel for them. Helwaz watched as Georgi's demonstration grew even more impressive before he bowed to the woman, who proceeded to try her hand at a wind talent. As she focused with great concentration, she caused a small, localized wind to form and grow. Briefly, it even became a funnel, but it was at that point she could no longer sustain it. Georgi clapped and placed a hand on her shoulder.
That must be your nightingale. She seems to be getting on well with Onus and his ilk.
Where is Onus?
If Georgi is there, then so is he.
No matter her allegiances, if that is the nightingale, she must come with us. Let us go speak with her.
Are you mad? That is Onus and Poke and the rest of them. They left because I took up with you, Tone. They will not be happy to see you.
Perhaps, but the nightingale is the Emperor's servant, and we must trust in him to deliver her unto us, no matter who surrounds her.
Shalika looked at him as if he had sprouted a second head.
Your Emperor's will seems a fickle thing, and that woman seems quite happy to be in Georgi's company. It would be best if you stayed out of sight until we figure out their mood.
I am the Emperor's own. She will answer to me.
You're a man in a grey cloak leaning on a branch. You shouldn't even be wearing the cloak anyway. That sojourner stripped you of it.
That was not...
Tone, please. We are bringing the Nightingale out of there one way or another. I brought you along because I thought we'd be dealing with Imperials, but these are villagers and travelling people. They hate the Order, and you most of all. Georgi is a powerful wizard. Onus is the greatest knife dancer in his band. And if all of the rest of them are there, they outnumber us at least 10-1. We don't want to fight. Shalika and I will go and speak with them.
Tone's cheeks went red. His eyes flashed. Helwaz gestured to the woods behind him.
Tone, please. You can watch from hiding here. The moment we need you, I will call for you.
Tone ducked his head.
Very well. I will wait here.
Thank you.
Helwaz turned toward the fort. Georgi and the woman had left the tower, and Poke was no longer visible on the walls.
What do you think?
I think they're going to kill us.
So we should go back empty-handed?
The question, Helwaz, is where would you rather die? In the streets of the capital, shivering in the dirt as you flee from the devils? Or outside these walls, trying to fix this broken world?
Asleep in my bed, so old that I must mash my food. And next to you.
Well then, our way is clear.
The Hapti girl started for the fort, and Helwaz was so surprised by her sudden departure that she had to hurry the machine along to keep it up. Chalaika stopped them close enough for a parley, but far enough from the walls that an arrow's force would spend itself before it struck home.
No sense in making it easy for them. You are the saint and the leader of our ragged band, no? It should be for you to open the parley.
Helwaz nodded. Unbidden, her mind began to compose a prayer to the sacred throne, begging for guidance.
No, there is no emperor. That is only what I can do.
The thought was oddly comforting.
Just one more impossible thing.
Suddenly, Onis appeared at the top of the wall. He looked older somehow, as if years and not days had passed since she had last seen him. His head was bound in linen, stained yellow by some unguents. It covered his eye and ear, and Helwaz could tell by the set of the cloth and the red stains on it that he had lost both.
Hello, Helwaz. It seems we are both one-eyed now.
Helwaz was shocked at the sorrow she felt at the sight of him. He was a fool and selfish, and for a short time he had been her friend.
I am sorry, Onis. I hope you are healing.
I am healing as well as I can without my mother's help. I never thought to see you again, and certainly not without your army. Where are they, Helwaz? Why have you come here?
The army is gone, Onis. The devils are in the capital.
I am sorry for that, Helwaz. I know that must grieve you, but it is nothing to me.
It is not nothing to you. I know how to beat them. I know how to send them back to hell and keep them there.
And that brings you to me. Do you think a single knife dancer, or even 20, will make a difference against creatures who scattered your entire army?
I do not need knife dancers. There is a wizard here called the Nightingale. I need her.
I do not know about nightingales, but the Order was keeping a wizard here. My people have liberated her. She is quite unharmed, I can assure you. She is practicing the talent with Georgi. I'm afraid it keeps her much too busy to go anywhere.
She is the only one who can send the devils back, Onis. Whatever you think of me, you cannot be a friend to them.
No more than you could be a friend to the Order, surely? Tell me, did your precious brother Tone put you up to this?
Onis, don't! So long as the devils are in the world, you will never be safe.
Onis spread his arms, indicating the palisade, the rickety tower.
Oh, I think we are well enough defended here.
Lys didn't stand, and it was stronger than this rat trap.
Lys was assailed by an army, trained and provisioned. The devils are like wild dogs, animals. They cannot organize a siege. And at Lys, we did not have this new wizard. She can summon storms, Helwaz. You have never seen the like.
I have already seen the like. A little squall that couldn't sustain itself for 10 seconds. She won't save you, Onis.
That may be, but it is no call to return her to the Order to be destroyed. We protect wizards here.
Damn you, Onis! You know I hate the Order. You know I am no friend to Tone. You know, and you don't care, because you are still a boy. Because your mother was right. Men are weak.
Onis pounded his fist on the top of the palisade.
My mother is dead.
And I mourn her. But we both know she would be laughing at you now. She would slap your head and curse you for a fool. Layla Bell knew what it was to put aside foolishness when something more important was at stake. Your mother knew how to fight.
Do not speak to me of my...
I will speak to you of your mother, Onis. She was my friend. She saved me and spoke for me when your people wanted to turn me out. And she would have told you what we both know. That this has nothing to do with the Order or Tone. You are angry because I will not love you. You are angry because I will not be your wife. And you have let it sour inside you until you are willing to give the world to the devil rather than swallow your pride. If your mother sits astride the great wheel and is watching this, then she is surely wondering what she did wrong to raise a boy who will not grow into a man.
Heads began to appear along the palisade, Cindy and villager alike, men and women she recognized, her old friends and traveling companions. They glanced from Onis to her and back to him. Helwaz felt the moment hang on a knife's edge, waiting for him to explode. and just as quickly as the anger had come, it was gone.
Onus, please. I have lost my mother. I have lost my mayor. I have lost my best friend. I cannot bear to lose anyone else. I need you.
Onus's shoulders slumped and his head hung, but he said nothing.
I am tired of shouting from outside a palisade. At least let me in so we can talk face to face.
We've got you, Tom.
Not so tough, are you?
Hawass turned to see Shalika sprinting toward three figures. Squinting, she could make out Danad and Ingemar Clothier, dragging a gray figure between them. Tone. They had found him, and they were bringing him to Onus. She turned back to the boy, but his face was already shifting from recognition to shock to rage.
Clever words, and to think I nearly fell for them. Your precious pilgrim comes to oversee your mission. Where are his troops hiding? Danad! Ingemar! Slit the bastard's throat!
Shalika!
But the hapti girl was already picking up speed, knives fanning out in her hands.
I've got him!
Shalika cast her first knife. It sliced past Danad's thigh, laying open the skin and sending him to one knee. Tone shook one hand free, but Ingemar seized it again, pinning his arms behind him. The Clothier was young and strong and much bigger than Tone, and soon he had the pilgrim on his knees. Hawass swallowed the urge to run to Shalika's side and drove the machine forward, feeling the engine translate her strides into a powerful sprint. She hurtled toward the gate, lowering her shield as she came on, angling for the seam where the portal joined the wall.